Now, for myself, we're at the it's the 15th anniversary of 9/11, and for me, my involvement in independent media, I would say, largely began with 9/11 because I saw so many of these. You know, through my investigations on the internet, I saw so much that was just not being discussed, even in a lot of the conventional alternative media. And so I just felt compelled to go out and distribute the things that I was finding, you know, leaflets and DVDs, and even hosting a couple of film screenings at a public theater. And that led me into becoming a broadcaster at my community radio station, and ultimately the podcasts I do with Global Research. And I was just curious to know, because you're doing a lot of this sort of, you know, very beyond the pale reporting on 9/11 and all these other subjects. I'm wondering what role 9/11 in particular had as an influence to your own work.
Well, I think my story sounds very similar to yours in that I was also, I think, drawn to the idea of alternative media and what could be accomplished through the independent independence offered by the internet. Because of the types of things that were not being reported on, 9/11 was the foundational event, but on a number of other issues. But certainly 9/11 was a core event for me. It was the first one that I really started researching on my own, and that I started to get into and started to notice the discrepancies between what was being portrayed in the mainstream media, and even, as you say, a lot of the conventional alternative media, and what I was encountering online, the information I was able to dig up on, again, documentable, verifiable information about Osama bin Laden and the CIA in the 1980s, or the Operation Northwoods plan, or things like that, that start to ring alarm bells when it comes to 9/11 and was not being portrayed anywhere. And the internet offered that outlet through which ordinary people can reach out to tens, hundreds, thousands, occasionally millions of people around the world. It is truly a phenomenal time to be alive in that respect. So I knew I was compelled to do something. And within a few months, really, of starting along the investigative trail, I was already thinking about starting a website, something that I had never even contemplated before in my life.
Yeah, myself as well. I had not really thought seriously about getting into broadcasting or journalism until I went onto the internet and saw, you know, this, all of these very well-defended positions that were being put out by superior writers. I mean, people like Michelle Chosadovsky, for example. James, what would you say then would have been the impact of 9/11 and 9/11 truth on media at large, you know, not just mainstream, but alternative media? Have we seen any sorts of impact, or on the way people consume media?
I think that would come down more to the individual level. Certainly when we look at the mainstream media and how it has been affected by 9/11 or 9/11 Truth, I think the only thing that we can conclude is that 9/11 Truth is a perfect gateway for people who don't see the control of the media, or how the media discourse is very tightly narrowed down to a very well-defined spectrum of allowable opinion. People who have difficulty seeing that can see it very clearly on issues like 9/11, especially when they've looked into various aspects of 9/11 Truth and found some of the stunning, really truly remarkable information that's out there that one really has to dig around on the internet, usually through alternative independent media, in order to find. And I think that shows in a quite crystal clear manner that this is certainly not something that's going to be televised. The revolution will not be televised, as they say. So I think that's the perspective we have for the mainstream media. And as you say, the conventional foundation-funded alternative media, in quotation marks, that won't go near subjects like this or tend to denigrate them along with the MSM, I think also shows that there is a large degree of control of allowable opinion, even within the so-called dissenting voices out there. Something that should not be unfamiliar to people, for example, who are familiar with Noam Chomsky's idea of manufacturing dissent and allowing certain acceptable forms of critique in order to obscure the real critique. And interestingly enough, of course, Noam Chomsky is another one of those people who say, don't look into 9/11, it's not worth your time. Make of that what you will. But I think that this issue exposes what can be seen as real independent media versus establishment media of various sorts, even ones that are conventionally thought of as alternative media. And so we see that 9/11 Truth has ultimately flowered and reached fruition as an internet-based movement primarily. And that's interesting because it may be the first real independent alternative media movement that has arisen, did arise around this 9/11 truth issue. And that speaks to the at least potential power of alternative and independent media, which has, I think, truly influenced the public consciousness on events like these, where when I was starting 10 years ago, the idea of false flag terrorism, let alone the concept, was completely foreign to the vast majority of the population. The most people, when confronted with the idea, would say, why would the government attack itself? We've reached the point where not only is it now a much more well-understood phenomenon, but even mainstream media has to, in the wake of many of these events that are coming along, has to question, is this a false flag event? And of course they will usually answer no, but at least that idea is now au courant. And I noticed that in the wake of the Boston Marathon bombing, for example, it was a Yahoo News headline, was the Boston Marathon bombing a false flag event? That's a pretty remarkable shift in public consciousness, and I think that has been accomplished solely and specifically through this internet-based movement.
Okay, well, that's very interesting, and I was wondering, though, about if there are in your mind, and maybe you just touched on one, but important turning points over the last 15 years that in terms of 9/11 truth and, you know, where there's been breakthroughs of any kind.
Well, I think there was a lot of momentum and activity occurring around the fifth anniversary in 2006. And I say this because I think that was really what ultimately ended up reaching me. I was someone who had avoided 9/11 truth as much as possible for the first 5 years, dismissing it instantly as crazy conspiracy theory. It was around the fifth anniversary that it started to get a little bit of attention in various mainstream sources. And there was, for example, there was a 9/11 fifth anniversary conference that was being held, I believe, in New York, around the time of the anniversary, that was broadcast on C-SPAN and garnered some attention. And there was some talk in various places around there. And I think that activity was what ultimately filtered down through YouTube to someone like myself, who at the time was living in Japan and rather disconnected from mainstream American political discourse. And somehow or other, that chain of events led to me investigating more about 9/11. So I think that was a significant time around that point. And since then, I mean, there's been a number of things that have managed to make it out into a larger audience through the 9/11 truth movement, including probably around the 7th or 8th anniversary, somewhere in that time frame, it was discovered by diligent that, did you know the BBC actually reported the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7 before it collapsed? That came through an independent researcher who was going through some of the archives that exist out there. So that I think those types of events have managed to filter down to the general public consciousness in ways that are difficult to calculate. But we do know that, again, around perhaps it was the 7th or 8th anniversary, somewhere around there, there was polling done that showed something like 52% of the American public believed they had been lied to about 9/11. So that's, again, a pretty significant stat, but one that you won't see reflected in mainstream coverage of the issue, of course. But still, I think there's a lot of indicators that this has reached down to a much wider section of the populace than would be indicated by what we see on TV.
James, we just got a couple of minutes left, but first of all, I wanted to mention that you put out a few years ago a very amusing satirical video called 9/11, A Conspiracy Theory, where you go through all of most of the major points of contention about the official story in less than 5 minutes, and at the same time, you know, kind of make a mockery of the use of the pejorative conspiracy theory and putting it in an over-the-top way. And I do encourage our listeners to go and check it out, because it's on YouTube. It's got close to 3 million hits. But you've also got a new series of videos coming out just over the past week, I've noticed. I think there's four. It's called 9/11 Suspects, and I was wondering if you could maybe give us a bit of a brief breakdown of who these people are and why they're there? Because as far as I can tell, they don't look like the photographs of the hijackers that I've seen.
Certainly not. The concept behind this series is that these are not people that I think are the kingpins or masterminds behind 9/11, but people who I think any real criminal investigation of what occurred on 9/11 would begin with, would start looking at these people and the information that they were privy to and or that they were involved in, the events that they were involved in, and how that relates to what was happening on 9/11. So, for example, as a fairly non-controversial example, Christine Todd Whitman, who was the EPA administrator on 9/11, who in the days and weeks following the events of September 11th repeatedly issued assurances that the air was safe to breathe in lower Manhattan, it's okay, you don't need a respirator. To be fair, the EPA did say that first responders on the pile, on the actual Ground Zero designated area, should wear respirators. But other than that, they actually discouraged people in lower Manhattan generally from wearing respirators and encouraged people to return to work. Encouragement that we now know is having health effects on a lot of people, of course, first responders, but also residents of Manhattan and Brooklyn, who ended up trying to sue Christine Todd Whitman. And that court case proceeded in 2006 when a federal district court judge ruled that Christine Todd Whitman and the EPA's reassurances actually contributed to the danger, those reassurances were conscience shocking. But that was overturned a couple of years later by a panel of judges that decided that her federal immunity kicked in here, that she couldn't be prosecuted for this. So that's an example that probably a lot of people have heard of in some respect or other, the air is safe to breathe lie that is still killing first responders and others who are dying of the 9/11 cancers. But beyond that, people like Rudy Giuliani, who of course was mayor of on 9/11 and presided over the destruction of the crime scene. He was also given some type of warning about the collapse of the buildings before the buildings collapsed, a warning that was not passed on to the first responders. Of course, over 300 firefighters dying in the collapses of those buildings. We have people like Philip Zelikow, the executive director of the 9/11 Commission, who controlled that commission from top to bottom in terms of everything, the scope of investigation, the people to be questioned, the lines of question to be given them, the shape and outcome of the final report. And this man was deeply tied into the Bush administration, having co-authored a book with Condoleezza Rice and been on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, deeply tied into the Bush administration that he was supposedly investigating. So certainly someone that you would look into in terms of the cover-up of 9/11. People like Robert Baer, a career intelligence officer with the CIA, who is well-known. He appears on TV and talking about intelligence matters. He has a Time magazine column about intelligence matters, who a few years ago said, "I know the guy who cashed out the day before 9/11. He may have been lying about that, but at any rate, I think that would be worthy of further investigation. Strangely enough, he's never been questioned about those comments. So these are the types of people that I think a real criminal investigation of 9/11 would really start to look into, and that's the impetus behind the 9/11 suspect series.
With more to come, no doubt. James Corbett, I want to thank you very much for joining us and sharing these thoughts with us on this pivotal anniversary.
Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with James Corbett. He is the producer and host of The Corbett Report. You can find his videos at CorbettReport.com and on the Corbett Report YouTube channel.